Hey everyone, this is a Halloween season reboot of Art and Murder Part 1, which was originally released on October 26th, 2018, hence our very 2018-era banter at the beginning of the episode. Heads up, listener discretion is advised for this episode. We do talk about murder and some other violent themes along with art, but it is not appropriate for all audiences and may be upsetting for some, so do keep that in mind before listening. Thank you. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ginny. And we are the Art History Babes.
We're already a couple of bottles of wine deep.
balls
of wine. We've had a few balls of wine.
That is an understatement.
You know people are clicking off right now. Goodbye. Have a good rest of your day.
No.
Stay
with us.
We're throwing it back to the old school format where we would come to you guys late at night after a long day of grad school and many glasses of wine. And we're...
this is recording?
No, I was going to say we're embodying that spirit of the early days of the podcast. And yeah, we've been hanging out for a while and now we're going to make an episode.
So if you're...
That's what's happening. It's happening.
If you are somewhat new to this podcast...
Oh God, I hope they're not.
I hope that you're not.
At this point.
Right.
Well, but if you are, for whatever reason, sure. I just want to... introduce you all to what used to be the original podcast, which was spawned out of the love for art history, but also the hatred of being in a graduate program. And so we decided, I mean, it was really Corey's idea, but we really said, let's make a podcast and somehow try to reignite our passion for this discipline that we're so frustrated with right now. And a lot of those early episodes revolve around us being real drunk.
Was spawned from the love, but also the hatred.
It's true. And so we're coming to you today. You know, we're fresh, we're out, we're in the world of art history. And we're also in true...
We're here.
We're in true.
We're here.
What the fuck word was I about to say? We're introducing a topic today. I was going to say introducing, and then I lost my steam there.
I thought you were going to say we're in true form, which
we are in true form. And also to
Ginny,
be...
that's better.
To be fair, I think this is fitting because this is our 2018 Halloween episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we love Halloween and we love weird shit and creepy shit.
The macabre.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I pronounce that word wrong every time. I always say like macabre, which is wrong.
I get that though.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's how it's spelled.
I just want to pronounce every letter in a word. What's up with that?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Ouch.
But yeah, so this is just a very, you know, we're celebrating the spookiest time of year. And we're celebrating each other. And we're just going for it. So this is going to be a little bit more of a drunk history-esque episode.
Yeah. And, you know.
Derek Waters, see us.
Shout out to Derek Waters. Bring us on the show.
We would love to be guests.
I would love it.
We would kill it. We would kill it on that show.
I think we would be really good on that show.
They wanted to do like an art history series. We would kill it on drunk history.
When we post this episode, we're going to hashtag
drunk history.
Yeah. Hashtag drunk history. Like, please.
And we're going to at Derek Waters. Shout out to Art History Babes Nation. Everyone at Derek Waters.
Please do.
/ Corey's Chili Babies. Your new name.
So that is like a throwback to a Patreon extra that you have to check out for you to understand why I'm forever going to refer to you as my Chili Babies.
That's our new Art History Babes Nation / Corey's Chili Babies.
It's a thing.
Aww. That's a really cute name for Art History Babe Nation.
My little Chili Babies. I can tell the story.
No, they gotta go listen to Patreon episode to get the story. exclusive content.
Yeah, no, you have to check it out. Can I just give you guys some exclusive content right now?
Give it to
so
me.
So I just watched little Pancake Jefferson, which is the Art History Bay's mascot, take a good dump in his little...
Did he eat it?
And then he turned around and ate it.
Yeah.
Jen's eyes are saucers right now. She will never unsee that.
I know that this is what rabbits. This is what
but
rabbits
like when
do.
When you see it, it's still like, wow.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
So if you're familiar with our Art History Babes logo, there's a rabbit. And originally, that was the Bumblebee original Art History Babes mascot.
OG.
Who has since passed. And we have another rabbit with us nowadays, and his name is Pancake Jefferson, and he's very adorable, but he does eat his own poop. So
yeah, rabbits do that, in case you didn't know. They don't get all the nutrients they need the first time around. They gotta eat it again.
Wow.
And then they get all the nutrients they need.
Evolution, guys.
You know, biology is a weird
thing. So on that note, let's segue, and there's really not a clear segue in any way at all, but well, we should really get to the topic of today, which is real spooky, because this is our Halloween episode.
Ooh. It's murder. We're gonna murder.
So today we're talking about art and murder.
Murder.
Red Rum.
fuck that kid.
That movie's so good.
I know. It is
fuck,
really
the
good.
The Shining is so good. That is like top 10 best movies. I'll, like, so good.
Jack Nicholson will never not be crazy and scary to me.
Oh,
because
yeah.
he's so good in that.
And he's
I was
also-
like, sir, your eyebrows... don't move the way that a regular sane person's eyebrows move.
Because he is not regular
and
insane.
I don't know. Whew, what a great movie.
That movie's so good.
I wonder if they'll remake that movie, and I wonder if I'll hate it or if I'll like it.
They shouldn't remake it. It's too perfect.
I know, but so, they remade It, so I'm like... Mm.
Did you see the new It?
I have not.
I watched
seen
it the other night by myself.
I watched it the other night, too. Not by myself, but I was still like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, you know, the original It... which we're going to touch on this later in this episode.
Oh,
so
foreshadowing.
This is not a complete tangent, but the original It was sort of like a mini series, and then it has recently been remade, and it's actually pretty good.
Yeah. The dude that played It, he's one of those Skarsgårds, so like very tall and handsome and Swedish. And he did a really, really good job.
Dude, speaking of, so like, It, Stephen King, did any of you watch Castle Rock on Hulu?
I didn't.
The dude that's in Castle Rock plays It.
He is same like, guy. I am very attracted to him. Because
he
is
looks
weird
like
and
I
spooky,
could meet him in a
hot.
Cafe and he would like drink 5 cups of coffee and
whoa.
Still maintain his cool.
Yeah.
And whoa. Just like... speak to me across smoke in a German bar.
And I like
and
he legit
that's just what I envision.
Yeah. He legitimately us. Plays the devil like incarnate in Castle Rock and I'm like, I hit that. He is
wow.
something about
I think
him.
He's a real good actor. I mean it's in his blood.
Yeah. He's
quite,
a great actor.
Quite literally.
He's hot, but like in a kind of weird, spooky way. I love it. I
lanky
love it.
And those sunken eyes.
Oh, I love lanky and sunken eyes. I love that. Ooh.
Same sister.
What's his name? Bill Skarsgård.
Bill Skarsgård.
Mm. He would check him out.
He would be a terrifying partner to like have.
Oh,
to, like,
but it would be exhilarating.
He really would.
Dad.
I don't know. He's.
Oh
he's,
wow! I'm like looking at pictures of him right now.
Right.
Woo!
He's hot.
I love his like weird. He's got like Steve Buscemi eyes.
Yeah.
I always, he I always knew that Buscemi was like hot.
Little Pete Davidson.
That's a bit far. But
I'm
no,
weird.
No.
Yeah.
Come on.
Steve Buscemi is not.
He
hot.
He looks like Steve Buscemi. Oh.
No, he does look like Steve Buscemi, but Steve Buscemi isn't hot.
But he
at
looks
angle,
a little
he
bit
looks like a young Buscemi.
He's a Buscemi.
But I want to go back to Natalie's point.
I think he looks like a Pete Davidson.
Pete Davidson types. Yeah. I love Pete Davidson types.
Okay.
Like you cannot deny there's some Pete
okay
in there
right now.
I know. I'm really worried about Pete Davidson right now.
I'll date him in a heartbeat. Just don't propose to me.
Pete Davidson and I have very similar astrological placements. And
is he a Scorpio?
He's a Scorpio.
So then, Corey, you can tell us how he's doing. How is he doing?
He's a Scorpio sun, Capricorn moon.
Whoa.
And I'm a Scorpio sun, Capricorn moon. And from my perspective, he's not doing well right now.
I'm sure he's not.
I feel...
He's still working, which props.
Yeah, but I'm worried about Pete Davidson. I'm also worried about Ariana Grande. She's had a really shitty time. Right? I'm worried about both of them. Yeah. I'm deeply concerned for both of them.
Do you know? I'm sorry to our listeners that are like, what the hell are they talking about?
Before we get into the subject matter, I will not apologize.
No, you know what? That's it. I'm never going to apologize again.
Thank you.
Ever.
Thank you.
But what I was just going to say is there... are these posts going around on Twitter that are related to the Pete Davidson Ariana Grande split, and then you click on them and it's like register to vote, and I feel like that's what
that's a good idea.
You guys should register to vote. This is really interesting.
Please vote.
It's really not important. Let's remind you what is important.
I mean, it is important to them, but not to any of us.
Let's not get it twisted.
We don't need to care.
Voting is more important.
Please vote.
Like, you can care. You can care all you want, but voting's more important.
Truly.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But I think the moral of the story is Bill Skarsgård and Pete Davidson are both hot.
They can get it.
Corey said they could, like, get it. What did Kavanaugh call that? The Devil's Triangle. Devil's Triangle. It's a drinking game.
It's a drinking game. Well, yeah, you know that game.
Motherfucking liar. It's not a fucking drinking game. We all know what
I like that guy that called in to CNBC and was just, did I get the letters right? MSNBC. MSNBC. And said, yeah, excuse me, I just wanted to say that Devil's Triangle is actually a three-way with two men and one woman. And, like, they hung up on him, like, right when he was finishing. Like, he got to say that.
Why hang up on him? He's speaking truth.
I know. But he is spreading the knowledge. They couldn't hang up on him fast enough, but he got to say what he needed to say. And I was like, yes, thank you for clearing that up.
I mean, if a member of our fucking Supreme Court is going to lie to our faces, someone should be honest.
Boofing.
God. Fuck off.
He literally looks like a fucking gnome, but from the upside down.
An upside down gnome. You heard it here.
He does.
He looks like one of those spots that you get on your skin when you have cirrhosis of the liver.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the worst.
Oh my God, you guys. So let's
talk about murder.
Talk about murder. Art. Yeah. Well, that's a good segue because, we have a lot of strong feelings about the Kavanaugh.
We could talk about.
Mine actually, I think, fits a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, you've heard about it. It's relevant.
Yes.
Do you want to start?
So we'll circle back. No.
Okay, so Nat's going to say some stuff later.
Yep.
Who's going to start?
Stick around.
Do we want to start chronologically?
Yeah, yeah, I think we should do that's chronological.
No. So that's probably you then.
Allora.
All right, so just to clear things up, because I understand that that opening was a lot of stuff. We are talking about art and murder today.
I know. Yes. I love our listeners that just put up with us.
They keep reading the title like, is this right?
So Halloween episode, we're talking about high profile, interesting murders in the art world, past and present.
Yeah.
We're going to start off with Ginny. We're going to go back in time. We're traveling back in time.
So I'm going to talk about one of my problematic faves.
Oh, yes.
Michelangelo Merisi di Caravaggio.
I forgot his first name was Michelangelo.
I forget that a lot, too.
He took that as a sign as to why he should be a painter.
Yeah. Wow. Exactly. Honestly, same.
I mean, I would. I would do it.
Oh, my God, you guys. Yes. So, like, one more just quick off-topic thing before you get into this.
I thought I heard someone in the attic, but I imagined it.
There's no one in my attic.
I know.
Don't you fucking dare.
I know.
GS will not
stop it.
three.
I just pulled up Instagram. You guys, there is a Lisa Frank tarot deck, and I need to own it immediately.
That is not surprising. I know a woman who is approximately 31 years old made that. I just know it in my bones.
to be true. Well, my birthday's coming up, so if any of you want to, like, you know, make that happen for me, I would.
That's solid.
I would really appreciate that. But anyways, Caravaggio.
So I'm talking about Caravaggio. So Caravaggio, if you want to know more about him, we did our very first episode was The Bad Boys of Baroque.
Mm-hmm. Great episode.
He was one said bad boy of the Baroque.
Mm-hmm.
He was very, very bad.
Yeah.
He was really, really bad.
He was real bad.
I mean, there were a lot of them, but...
He's the baddest
he
boy.
He was probably the creme de la crop.
He was kind of a shithead.
It was bad.
It was bad.
Who's bad?
So just like a tiny, tiny little bit of background on Caravaggio before getting into all the terrible shit he did. So he's from a small town in northern Italy close to Milan. It's called Caravaggio. So like when you hear of these Italian Renaissance and Baroque artists, a lot of times what they're called, like Da Vinci, he was from Vinci, which was a province. Oh, same with Caravaggio.
I gotcha.
He was of Vinci or of
he Caravaggio. Was of the Vinci. And Caravaggio is from the Vag.
Fun fact.
I'm
okay.
I don't know. My name is of the. Do you guys know that?
Oh, yeah, it is.
You're from the Torre.
Of the Torre.
That means of the tower.
Jen knows.
Well, I speak the Spanish.
So this is a murder in two parts, or at least one part murder for certain. Second part murder, possibly.
Alleged.
Alleged. Caravaggio came to Rome in 1592. He was only 21 years old. And he was really trying to make something of himself and be an artist. And the place to do that at the time was Rome. So he comes to Rome and he's known as a hothead pretty early on. Did a lot of shit, you know, got into brawls, flung a hot plate of artichokes in a waiter's face because
I remember this story.
They were fried in oil as opposed to butter.
It's a great story.
That really hurts. You know, hot oil is not to be messed with. That's no joke.
It's hot dicks.
Booter and oil.
Booter and all. He was known in the city for being like very volatile, essentially.
A troublemaker.
Truly. Truly. And he was not from noble stock, but he loved dressing up in black and strutting around with a sword because that was like the visual marker of a noble in Rome in the 17th century. So he was just kind of like a poser. But there were descriptions of him where it's like, okay, yeah, he's wearing all black, but like his socks have holes in them. So, you know, he's doing all this bad shit. And meanwhile, he's making fucking beautiful paintings. As you do.
It's true. It's true.
As he did.
He was a multi-dimensional person.
Honestly, Caravaggio could probably get it too.
Let's pause about that one. I mean, we don't really know. He probably had syphilis. So
I'm going to get into that too. So basically, this is what happens. It is 1606. He's been in Rome for not quite a decade, so he's established, he's doing pretty well, and he stabs a man named Ranuccio Tommasoni in the femoral artery, which, if you're not familiar with where that is in the body, it's in your groin.
Oh.
And because of that, rumors spread that he actually meant to puncture the man in his balls.
Ah.
Or slice them and castrate them, which I don't know how that would have been accomplished because the swords back then were not so much the slicing blade, but the, you know, fancy fencing, like just a very sharp,
like a stabby blade.
Toothpick.
Okay.
like a lethal toothpick.
Yeah. So he stabbed him on the tennis courts in Rome.
Tennis gets heated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because of that, rumors were that it was a tennis game gone awry and that, you know, Caravaggio was just so incensed at the game that he tried to either castrate this man or just stab him in the groin. And he bled out on the tennis court.
Oh my God.
So dramatic. There's a lot of gossip around this event, and part of it, and again, go back to the Bad Boys of Baroque episode, because Nat talks about this, where Caravaggio wrote some very defamatory poems about a fellow artist named Giovanni Baglione, as he called him, Johnny Baggage.
Great.
Honestly,
one.
Caravaggio is fucking funny.
Yeah.
He said, "You are a disgrace to painting." And before that, he said he had a donkey cock that can't fuck anymore. I mean, it's very mean, but it's so funny.
It's pretty good.
So Baglione kind of got his own revenge later because Caravaggio died when he was only 39. And then Baglione wrote one of the first biographies about Caravaggio. And so he said, all right, this murder that Caravaggio did was all because of like a tennis game gone wrong. And, you know, brought to light that Caravaggio was accused of sodomy and like really played that aspect up. There have been more investigations since this happened, obviously. Like, at the time, it was kind of like, okay, he did this thing. And then the papacy put out a bando capitale, which was basically a death warrant, which meant that after he killed this man by stabbing him in the groin, someone could kill Caravaggio and either bring his body or his head. And that would be satisfactory.
I mean, the head is just a lot more feasible.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The fact that they give the option is nice. But yeah, like, yeah. If you have those two options, you're going to go with the head. It's just a lot more practical.
You know, it's easier to transport.
Yeah. Bodies are big.
I just like the idea of like walking into some official office and being like, here, and like holding up a head.
Like David and Goliath style, just like.
Dude, I was just going to say, it's very biblical.
Yeah.
It's very Caravaggio.
Yeah, mm-hmm, definitely. Mm-hmm.
So Caravaggio goes on the run, and he goes to Naples for a bit, and then he goes to Malta, where he tries to join with the Knights of Malta. And in talking earlier about how he always wore black and carried a sword, is like he always wanted to be a noble. He was from very humble origins and wanted to be more than he was. And so joining the Knights of Malta, which was like a strict religious order on the island of Malta, which is like, it's not part of Italy, but it's not far from it. It's south. It's an island in the sea.
There was a really good hand gesture.
Thank you. And at the time, and there still is a religious order there, but at the time there were some real religious bros there who pledged themselves to, it was a particular saint that they served.
Oh, no.
Okay, I got it. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
His name was Saint Angel. San Angelo.
I don't know why that's funny.
San Angelo, Saint John of Jerusalem.
All right, yes.
So they roll down for Saint John. And so he goes to this island. He's like, I'm into Saint John. I'm going to pledge myself to him. I'm going to paint you these paintings.
Why is he selling
John.
Cardi B?
Oh.
What if Cardi B is Caravaggio reincarnate?
Oh my god. Whoa.
I'm gonna pledge myself to him. Like, you know.
She also has a lot of brushes with
that
the law.
That was an amazing Cardi B impression.
I do that a little bit too much.
That was really good.
Oh my gosh. Caravaggio
B.
Yes,
wait, this
dude.
Would be a great Halloween costume. It's a cross between Cardi B and Caravaggio.
Only we would get it, but it'd be amazing.
Caravaggio B.
Caravaggio B.
Oh. I love this so much.
Oh my god, please keep going. I'm so happy you're still here.
That was brilliant. That was brilliant. We love you, Cardi B. We support you.
Oh, yeah.
We really do.
Mad support for Cardi B.
We really do. Okay, so he's with the Knights of Malta, and he's painting things about St. John to be like, okay, make me a knight faster. And it's unclear in the historical records exactly what happened, but it seems like he got into a brawl with one or more fellow Knights of Malta, and they were like, fuck you. We rescind your knightship. And they wanted to kill him because, you know, in the knighthood, it's all about honor.
Yeah.
And he was not an honorable dude. So he then runs away again And he goes up to Sicily for a bit, and then he goes back up to Naples. And I watched, you know, it's an interesting documentary. It's BBC, mm-hmm. and it's from 2002, and it's by, obviously, a very British man art historian, and his name is Andrew Graham Dixon.
Wow.
And so the documentary is called Who Killed Caravaggio, and it is really informative. It's on YouTube. Anyone can watch it. It's pretty good. Hmm. Although he does say, like, balls an uncomfortable amount of times, and whores an uncomfortable amount of times. But yes. Nonetheless, so what good old Andrew poses is that when Caravaggio was in Naples, there was a very popular kind of tavern and brothel called the Cerillo, and apparently a knight of Malta followed Caravaggio up to Naples and got in a sword fight with him and cut up Caravaggio's face and probably some other parts of his body. He escaped alive. And the knight that attacked him, according to Andrew, again, is Rodamonte Rorero. So, according to this account, then, from there, Caravaggio tried to go back to Rome to get a papal pardon. But he, like, went very strangely off course. And there's still, from what I have been able to find, there's no, like, consensus for why he did this. He went up to Portercole, which is north from Rome. It's like this little island. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, all these different stories and ideas about how he died. Like, oh, he died from syphilis. He died from lead. He died from sun poisoning. He died from salmonella. And he's, you know, that story of him, like, running down the beach trying to...
That's my favorite.
I know. It's so cinematic.
It's so dramatic.
It's great. But what this one art historian is saying is that somehow he landed over there because maybe that was a cheap deal that he got, you know, like equated to a weird layover. It's like, why am I going north when I'm going south? And why am I having a layover in Seattle when I'm going to fucking Austin, Texas? You know, what's happening? There's all this conjecture, but this art historian was pretty convinced in 2002 that Caravaggio died from infected wounds from that knight of Malta who attacked him.
Damn.
And meant to kill him in Naples because of the dishonor that he did to the knights of Malta. And then, interestingly enough, not too long ago on our Facebook page, we posted an article on Hyperallergic that some remains were uncovered in Porto Ercole. And according to the researchers who found these remains, they are in fact the remains of Caravaggio. And the reason that they say this, it's a little complicated. And honestly, DNA analysis is contested in its own ways, where it's like, okay, how accurate is it really? And how sure can you be? But what they did was they referenced DNA from people in the town of Caravaggio, because the records don't indicate any actual direct descendant of Caravaggio, because he was like a playboy and a murderer.
And a wannabe knight.
Wow. That just made him sound like really cool. Like, I mean, it wasn't supposed to, but it did.
Did it?
Yeah. You know, this is their process. So they go to this cemetery in Porto Ercole, and they scan for male bodies around 5'4". And just so you guys know, this is a really fun fact. Pull this out at all your future cocktail parties.
Okay.
The average height of the Italian man in the 16th and 17th centuries was 5'4", which is my height.
So, like, I'm 5'4", too.
Just keep that in mind. Keep it in your back pocket.
I'm 5'5".
You would have been a tall man.
Wow. Well, aren't you guys all so fucking cool?
How tall are you now?
Would have still been on the shorter side.
Yeah. Let's get guesses. Does anyone know how tall I am?
5'2".
1.5". So.
Hey.
Right in between.
I remember there was one time, like, last year where we were all hanging out and, like, we realized I was the tallest.
You are the tallest.
And that was, like, mind-boggling for me because I consider myself to be a very average height, but I've never really been the tallest in, like, a group
I think
of
that
people.
Art history typically attracts short people.
It's a thing.
Short, academic, intellectual people.
Yes. Yes.
Short body, tall mind.
Mm. You're so right. We're not limited by these physical shells. So anyways, they were scanning for dudes who were 5'4", aged 35 to 40 years old, and there was only one body in the cemetery that was dated from the 17th century. There was a strong presence of lead in the blood.
Whoa.
Lead in the blood.
They were like, okay, he's 5'4", he's from the 17th century, he's got a lot of lead in his blood, it's probably Caravaggio, which seems like a stretch. So then they did that DNA test of residents in the town of Caravaggio. And like I said, he had no direct descendants, but there were families with the same surname. So they compared the DNA with them, which I have mixed feelings about. I think the article is really interesting because it's like, hey, if this is the body of Caravaggio, he died of sepsis, which is just the infection of the blood. And that could easily have come from a sword wound, which Caravaggio got in like multiple sword fights also. It wasn't just the one guy that he stabbed in the groin. He got in brawls all the time. One time a police dude, you know, the equivalent of a police dude in 17th century Rome was questioning him about some wounds that he had after a bar fight. And he's like, oh, I was going down the stairs and it was dark and I fell on my sword. Like, that's real. There's interviews saying that. So I think it's definitely very plausible that that is how he died, but I'm not 100% convinced that those are his bones.
Sepsis is a very, like, all-encompassing thing, though.
Exactly. You could get sepsis from a hangnail.
Yeah. A lot of
untreated
things can cause sepsis. Like, that's a very large, you know. So he probably did die from sepsis, but, like, that... Could've been. Can result from a number of things.
Well, exactly. That wasn't sepsis, like, that was the underlying thing in the beach story. It was that he had gotten in the sword fight and was basically, like, dying of the wounds and was trying to chase down his boat that was sailing away.
Yeah.
Very dramatic.
Yeah, so it's just, like, a combination of, like, sepsis and heat stroke from running on the beach.
Like, you can only run so far when you're dying. You're bleeding and infected. Your body can only run so far.
Yeah. But it's amazing because and there are some really interesting conspiracy theories that he was not only killed by the Knights of Malta, but it was like the Knights of Malta in league with the papacy because Caravaggio's religious paintings in a lot of cases like caused quite a bit of stir because he would model like the Virgin Mary off of a sex worker that had washed up on the Tiber River and would have
like a dead one?
Yeah.
You don't know that painting?
Oh, I think that we talked about this in the Bad Boys of the Brook episode.
Yeah, she looks pregnant, and then it's like, is she pregnant or not, is she's just bloated
from death?
From drowning.
So
we're not laughing.
No, we're laughing at the ludicrous.
We're laughing at the shock that it caused at the time.
What's the word?
Lunacy.
Luda.
Luda! That's where we're all going.
Luda!
God damn it.
I saw Ludacris live.
Look.
I've seen that man in concert.
Oh God, I'm so sorry. let's bring it back.
So, lots of conjecture about how Caravaggio himself died, but what is undeniable is that he killed a man.
So murder.
He killed at least one man.
If not more. I mean, you know, and what's really interesting too in like looking at this documentary and reading about this is that like it was really popular. I'm not laughing. That was like a breathy thing that sounded like a laugh, but it's not.
I feel like we should just straight up say like we're pretty drunk right now and we're talking about murder and we're probably going to laugh, but that doesn't mean we think murder's funny.
No.
What? I think that is a really good just advisory for this episode and we don't need to apologize anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to laugh from this point forward and we are not going to say that we're sorry.
Yeah.
Because we are sorry.
We don't think murder's funny.
No.
But we're also just having a nice time.
And also, everyone watches horror films and experiences some level of sick sadness.
Sure. Well, that's why you have so to popular. Like laugh at this shit. Otherwise, it's just dark. Like, it's inherently shitty and dark. So right. the laughing just like balances it out. We're
definitely.
Just, right. we're balancing the scales, guys.
It's interesting so too that
let me listen to that long s and scales that I just slurred out.
Scales.
Everything is very slurry right now.
It's interesting that Caravaggio is considered to be one of history's greatest Baroque artists.
Mm-hmm.
And we will continue to speak of him in that way. Even though it is completely well documented that he was a murderer.
Yeah. No, he's a total fucker.
Yeah,
totally.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because like I had read a little bit more about why he killed Tommasoni, who was this 17th century Roman pimp. And some of it's thought that one of the sex workers that he was like the pimp for, this woman named Felide Malandroni, who modeled for a portrait for Caravaggio. So people were like, maybe Caravaggio was like hooking up with her.
Hey.
And then, you know, she was also hooking up with Tommasoni, and Tommasoni challenged him. But in the records of this duel between Caravaggio and Tommasoni, Tommasoni's brothers were there. So that one, like, very British art historian, Andrew, he seemed to suggest that maybe Caravaggio was actually sleeping with Tommasoni's wife,
ooh,
who, after Tommasoni was killed, gave up a baby daughter.
What?
And then remarried. So he was like, maybe that baby was Caravaggio's love child. And it's all, you know, it's all just circumstance.
Wow. Scandal.
Circumstantial and just kind of like conjecture. But it's fun. But whether Caravaggio himself died of lead poisoning, syphilis, mercury, heat stroke, sepsis.
Is that one of the ones?
Homicide.
Homicide.
Right, right.
We are not certain, but he certainly did stab a man in the groin, and the papacy was like, bring us his head.
And he certainly died.
And he certainly created art. So we got art, we got murder.
Definitely created some dope-ass art. I mean, really, you can go into a church, a couple churches in Rome, one or two churches in Naples, one in Sicily, one in Malta. I think I'm getting the numbers right on that. Sorry if I'm not, but I'm close. And you just look at his paintings and they are so like theatrical and dramatic, mm-hmm, and just the play with light and arrangement of the forms and like how he handled his compositions. It's always going to be incredible to me. Like it just standing on its own, it's amazing and it's beautiful. And then considering it in the context of the time where it really was very groundbreaking. He was going in a totally different route from a lot of his contemporaries and inspired a lot of artists after him that were dope as fuck, like Artemisia Gentileschi. Yeah. So
I also feel like there's this weird thing where the farther away in history we're removed, the easier it is to just be like okay with like an artist's shitty behavior.
Dude,
like, I mean, the farther back it was, it's like we just give more and more leeway.
And half of it is coping with it.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Half of it is legit because as we talked about in the Artemisia Gentileschi, mm-hmm, episode, at different points in history, people have the capacity to deal with things at different levels.
Right.
So there's a certain level of projection that happens from, mm-hmm, our point of view, depending on how far you go back. So it's easier to kind of laugh about it depending on how much we're able to be like,
how much distance there is.
Yeah. But not even just distance, like ability to be like, oh, they didn't even process it the way that we're processing it.
Right.
So they're not seeing it in a painful way that we see it. And it's like just being able to have that,
I think,
realization
helps. And it's totally true. And I think a big part of what being an art historian is about, like, I think, it was Baxendall, a famous art historian. I forget his first name, but if you look up Baxendall, you'll find him.
What is his first
name? Michael? But so Michael Baxendall talks about this practice in art history called period eye. A good example of this is like when we look at paintings kind of prior to the Renaissance, where like babies look very weird and humans look very weird. And we're like, what the fuck is this weird shit? Did people not understand? It looks weird.
Did you not know what a baby looked like?
When they were looking at it.
How did you not look at this and go, that is weird?
Yeah. But the thing about period eye is that you have to try to understand that visual language within the context that it was made. You know, how many people were exposed to art? What were they looking at in terms of earlier art and their kind of reference points, and not putting our own contemporary conceptions and preconceptions onto art and history that was long before we were alive. So part of it in looking at like a Caravaggio is like, I mean, for the time he was also considered to be pretty shitty.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't a great guy at
A great guy, but like he didn't stand out that much. Like one of my true art historical loves, as is probably evident at this point in the genesis of our podcast, is Bernini. I love that man. I think he was an artistic genius and he was a sexy man. I have a portrait of him when he was 34 and I'm like, give me that now.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
If you're a Bernini lookalike out there in the Bay Area of California, come holler at your girl.
In California. We are thirsty on this episode. Woo!
Sorry. But sorry, we're not sorry.
No, we're not apologizing at all in this episode. But the thing with Bernini, you know, he had a mistress who was married, and I talked about this in the Bad Boys of Baroque episode. Had a mistress that was married.
Costanza.
And to an artist that was in his own workshop. And then he got pissed that his mistress was hooking up with his brother, which I understand is disturbing. But he tried to murder his brother.
That was an attempted murder.
That was an attempted murder. And then he had his manservant cut up her face. Because as you will learn if you watch this Caravaggio documentary I referenced with that very British man on YouTube, he describes how cutting up people's faces was the language of the streets in Rome in the 17th century. He literally said it like that.
Wow.
Language of the streets.
I want to hear British man use the phrase the language of the streets.
I know. Something about the idea of a British man saying that, I'm not like intimidated. I don't know.
I certainly don't think you should be intimidated.
Like, it could sound intimidating if someone else said it, but not.
This man is the least intimidating. He like he's sitting on like the coast in Porto Ercole and he like takes off his little loafers and his socks and he's wearing a suit. And then he just picks up his shoes and walks out of the line of the camera. I'm just like, you know,
that's nice.
If only I could be a British bitch and be on the BBC and do their documentaries for art history. And I would just do the most ridiculous shit.
Yeah.
Where I'd interview people in like grand ballrooms, drinking champagne and taking off my shoes while wearing a suit.
And it just makes you like so quirky.
Can you imagine, though? Us, like the art history babes.
Working for the BBC.
Never in our lives.
It would be the funniest shit. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Oh, I would be honored. I'd be like, take me to the queen. I'll thank her personally.
I would charm the pants off of the queen.
It would be so good. It would be so good. But on that note, we badly need to take a break. Pants?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We badly need a break.
We need
it bad.
We need it. BRB.
All right, you guys, we'll be right back.
And we're back.
We're back.
Back again.
We're back. We're talking about art and murder. I mean,
Are you speaking backwards?
Try again.
We're playing the record in reverse.
I am possessed by some sort of demon. We are talking about art and murder, among some other things. We just had a nice story about our boy Caravaggio, and now we're going to push it forward a little bit.
All right, guys. So I have the trial of the century.
Whoa.
AKA the murder of Stanford White. So if you've heard, you know. If you haven't, buckle up.
I don't know about this story.
It's a good one.
It's really good.
I'm excited.
It's crazy.
I'm excited to learn.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it all begins with Florence Evelyn Nesbitt, who ends up going by just Evelyn Nesbitt.
It just reminded me of
Miss
Toy
Nesbitt.
Story. I'm Mrs. Nesbitt.
I remember that.
Buzz Lightyear's Mrs.
Because it's
Nesbitt.
Been overshadowed in our minds by this
it's
story.
When, yeah, Buzz Lightyear kind of has a breakdown.
A mental breakdown.
A mental breakdown, and then he's like, I'm Mrs. Nesbitt.
Oh, man, that just made that part of that so much darker.
Oh, I can't wait to hear the story. Let's hear the story. I need to hear the story.
Damn, Mrs. Nesbitt is, she's a character in this. Okay,
this is
anyway.
Great. This is so good.
All right, so Evelyn Nesbitt, she was an American chorus girl, artist, model, and actress.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
triple threat?
Yeah.
Quadruple threat?
She really was the first
it girl, the first supermodel. I mean, she came onto the scene around the time when photography was becoming a more used medium. So she kind of rode that wave from illustration to photography and just being...
And lithography for like all those like early advertisements for like cigarettes and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like that style that... I don't even know what to call that.
It was just she
old-timey, like Art Nouveau kind of like
she
it's a great catch-all. It was old-timey.
Old-timey.
So needless to say, she was remarkably beautiful by all accounts, to the point where as a chorus girl, she would steal the attention from the stars of the show, to the point that it was like a problem. And she garnered a lot of attention from a lot of men. So she moved to Philadelphia for a while, then moved to New York, kind of made that transition. She first moved to New York at 15 years old, and it was December of 1900. And she was modeling for famous artists pretty much immediately. For example, James Coral Beckworth dubbed her a perfectly formed nymph, which is just a very creepy thing to call a 15-year-old. Yeah. But
also, if you want more context, you should check out our blog and the blog post I did on nymphs and what all of that means.
That would be a great resource. And he had her posing for him twice a week the first week she showed up in New York, like on the rotation. So she was sought after, and she also attracted the attention of Stanford White, who was a famous New York designer and architect. Maybe most famously, he designed Madison Square Garden. Maybe you've heard of it.
Maybe. Mayhaps you've seen a pop star there.
Maybe. And at this time in history, Madison Square Garden had the tallest tower with a 13-foot sculpture of Diana. Because this was a time of classicism.
Oh, yes.
Where we were using classical mythology to justify nude
women's tits.
Yeah. People wanted to see boobs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't wear clothes back then. The Civil War had happened. So.
The First World War was coming. There was just a lot going on. People wanted to see nudies.
I mean, I don't blame them.
The boys abroad wanted to see some bosom.
Yeah.
So give them a
They were dealing with a lot.
They were.
You know, misogyny aside, they just, you know, they were dealing with a lot.
Was really shitty.
It's not even just boys. Like,
yeah, I was going to say.
Boobs are great.
Yeah, like, they were just the ones fighting the wars, so they wanted the boobs. Yeah, but like,
boobs are objectively cool.
They're pretty good. You know?
Like, I can appreciate a nice pair of boobs regardless, you know?
Sure. It's my favorite part of the morning is waking up and
be like, hey, my boobs.
Hey,
boobs.
I take, get into the shower, and then I'm like, oh, hey.
They're all right.
I like them. Anyway.
All right. So. So at the time,
Nat doesn't want to weigh in on the boob conversation. She's like,
no, I was just told to stick to my story, so I'm trying to be a good girl and stick to my story.
Oh. That's true. That's fair.
You told me I was supposed to be good.
Be a good girl.
I'm so sorry. Miss messages here.
No. Please continue, Nat. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's totally fine.
We're the worst.
You're the best.
It's not your fault. It's ours.
Time is a construct. Hey, remember me? Hi.
Who could forget you?
Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right. So, Evelyn met Stanford White, architect, big name. He kind of had it in the bag because he was in with the really wealthy socialites because he was building these lavish buildings in New York City. But he was also still an artist at heart, so he was able to kind of cross the boundaries between the upper class wealthy and the bohemian artists. So he was partying across New York City. He had his hand in all of the parties. He also had a thing for young girls.
Oh, God.
Young chorus girls. And
I feel like that is like such a turn of the century thing, like young chorus girls.
Young chorus girls and just really intense sexual activities.
Oh, come on.
Yes, this is where the story gets dark. So he used another chorus girl to get Evelyn to his apartment. Mm-hmm. he got the two of them there. He also called them the his snuggeries, which is just a really gross term.
So I feel like that word could be used in a really cute context.
It's not cute.
It's not being used cutely here. But in a different context, it could be very cute.
Yeah, I'd be happy for someone to reclaim snuggery, because this is not a good...
Like, I think of Bun as my little snuggery.
Oh, where is she?
Sure.
Come back.
But in this context, it is gross.
No, it's gross.
Yeah, it's not good.
So explain.
Yeah, so Evelyn is here with Stanford White and this other chorus girl. I believe her name's Eva. So another one of her colleagues. And... they have a lunch with champagne and they get all boozed up and he goes, oh, I have this room I really want you to see. And he brings her to this room where there is a red velvet swing.
That is so bad. That's all bad.
It's really not good. It's not good. She's very young. She's like, she's 15 years old. She's a child. She's by herself.
Not okay.
Yeah. I don't think I've mentioned this. He's like 47. So he is three times
like, what, 15?
He is three times her age.
That's so fucking gross.
He is three times her age. They are in this room and he gets her to swing on the swing and they play this game where the other chorus girl is holding up a parasol and Evelyn is supposed to try and swing out as high as she can and kick through the parasol, and it's supposed to be a really fun game that's really just perverted
for him to look up her skirt.
Exactly.
Oh my god.
Yes, it's all very gross and perverse. Ugh. And so this happens. It ends. And then they go on and this relationship between Evelyn and Stanford kind of like continues to a point where they see each other a few more times and he invites her to a party. And she comes to this party and no one's there.
Oh, that's the Bill Cosby move.
Yeah. The uh-oh feeling ensues. He invites her. She comes. It's supposed to be a whole thing. And it's just
no one's fucking
her.
There.
He's like, and oh, I don't know where everyone is tonight.
Look, and he met her with some really creepy comment. Like, sorry everyone bailed on us. Like the old-timey equivalent of that.
Yeah, right.
I want to travel back in time and just kick him in the ball.
So she's, again, 15, 16 years old here. So she's at this fake party, and he fills her up with champagne. They drink a lot of champagne, gets it kind of uninhibited. Goes, again, I have this room you really need to see. Ugh. Takes her to a room in this place that is... covered in mirrors.
That's a lot of rooms in this place.
That's just a bad sign. That's just a
mirrors
bad sign.
Anyone everywhere and a bed in the center of the room.
Oh, god damn.
A mirror just broke above my bed.
Spooky.
Oh, my god.
Evelyn Nisbet is brought to this mirrored room, and she says that the last thing she remembers is kind of looking across all the mirrors, and then it goes black.
Did he drug her?
Well, he drugged her with champagne, and then he did things that I'm sure made her shut off her memory. So she awakes in this room, completely naked, looking up at herself in the mirror on the ceiling next to this man.
Ew.
And screams because she has been raped because she passed out. And at the time, the only way to prove rape was to prove that you had fought back. This was before statutory rape was even a thing. So she becomes his mistress because there just wasn't
another option.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
This was a time where they're just like rape. You know, she didn't fall in the category. It's just, that's how they defined it back then. And it's fucked. And we know that now. But
yeah,
it's how it was. So she was pulled into this very fucked up relationship with Stanford White, where she was kind of dating him. It was kind of a relationship type thing. They dated for a while. She had other things going on. She had a brief fling with John Barrymore, known as Jack Barrymore.
A la Barrymore family?
Of the Barrymores.
Ring a bell?
Yeah.
For real?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they the are like an old, old Hollywood so
this,
family.
Yes,
right?
This is before he was an actor. So at this time in history, he was just an illustrator. So he was kind of a low-level illustrator. He was her age, which was something unheard of to Evelyn. She was dating men two, three times her age consistently, because those are the men who were coming to see her at her shows and who were, you know, preying on her, essentially. But Jack was like 21. She was like 17. So they were a little more on the same footing. Didn't last long, about a month. And before she went to school, she was also approached by a man named Harry K. Thaw. And Harry K. Thaw was an eccentric millionaire who, again, like Sanford White, was obsessed with Evelyn and her beauty, and went to, I think it was 40 of her shows in 1 year. Yeah, had a fake name that he was pursuing her with, would send her all these gifts. She denied them. She would send them all back. And then he finally comes out of the shadows, says who he is, tries to court her. She knew him because he's also from Pittsburgh. So she like kind of knew the name. She knew the family. And she wasn't interested. She politely declined, went to school, got sick. Her mom tried to call Stanford White to help her out, and Stanford wasn't around. And so they called Harry, and he was eager to help. And he really wanted to move up that ladder. So he sends all the best doctors, and they supposedly gave her a...
Appendectomy.
There it is. But it is also reported that it may have been an abortion.
I was going to say, was she just preggers?
And and it's like, it's still unknown, but there are people on both sides, because reportedly she says it was not, and Jack Barrymore also says it was not, but there are a lot of reports that were like, she was pregnant with his baby.
Jack Barrymore.
Yeah, it would have been such a beautiful baby.
Like a, just a I was just looking at pictures of her, and I was like, wow.
She's stunning.
Stunningly beautiful.
And you guys have seen her picture. We'll post some, but like, you've seen her photo. She was the model at the turn of the century. So like, Coca-Cola user, Vanity Fair user, super Cosmopolitan beautiful. User, Harper Bazaar, like all of these really famous publications used her. All these advertisements used her.
Men used her.
Everyone used her. Poor girl.
I know.
She was so young. Anyway, so she went to school. She had this emergency surgery, albeit a appendectomy. Abortion.
Appendectomy.
We're not sure.
we'll just go either way,
you know, Harry Thaw came to her rescue, and that did not go unnoticed. And he basically convinced her mother to go as a family on this adventure through Europe. And what he did basically was tire out the mother. He tired her out to the point where she didn't want to do it anymore, and she stayed in London, and he took Evelyn to Paris. And he took advantage of her. You know, I'm really summarizing this, you guys. It'll be in our show notes, but listen to the My Favorite Murder if you really want the full story
I
of all of
this.
I love
those ladies. If they ever hear this episode of ours, Karen and Georgia, I appreciate you.
We appreciate you so much.
You want to collab?
Oh my God, that'd be great. But Karen does a great job of doing this full story. She gives it like a full hour, which is what it needs. I don't have that time, so I'm rushing through. But anyway, the mom leaves, and they're doing weird shit. He takes her to the site of virgins who were murdered throughout Europe.
He had a weird hangout.
I haven't even talked about that. Yeah, he had like a chastity thing where
like
he was
like... the virgin and the whore complex.
Yes, very obsessed with the idea of the virgin. Which, okay, so compounding all of this, he hated Stanford White for everything that he represented, because Stanford White was openly sexual and like having sex with all these young girls. And trust me, you'll see, Harry Thaw is no angel, but he was obviously very repressed and had a lot of shit he was dealing with and didn't know how to deal with open sexuality. Yeah. So he resented it very deeply and thought that Stanford White was everything wrong with society at this point, and he was basically running it to the ground. And he was on a mission to prove that. So all of this is kind of, you can see, fueling into a drama. He, in France, tries to propose to Evelyn. She says no, because she knows that if she says yes to him, she'll have to explain everything that happened with Stanford, and she is not wanting to give up that information. Pressures heighten, and she ends up spilling, and Harry is very upset, and ends up, not because he's upset, but ends up having her in a castle where he basically keeps her as a prisoner and beats her, like whips her, beats her, sexually assaults her for 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
And he's into like virgins and chastity.
Yeah. So fucker. It's a very paradoxical thing where he's like into chastity, but also sex to
sexual
him is
torture.
Yeah, yeah, like abuse and
ugh.
Yeah. So this is all fucked. Deep breath. And they come back and Evelyn agrees to marry him.
Oh, come on.
Because at this point in history, she has no other choice in her
view.
Yeah. It's sad. She just is looking at her situation and her family doesn't have a lot of money and this is what works for them. So she agrees to marry Harry Thaw. And they are married in a very controlled setting, and he has her live in a mansion for about a year without leaving. She is trapped, and his mother is super controlling, and it's all fucking nuts. And then, fast forward, he promises her they're going to go to Europe and have like a nice little rendezvous vacation. But before, they have to go see the show at Madison Square Garden.
No.
That opens right before they leave.
No.
That's a bad idea. So, 1906, they're going to New York to see the show, and she is stressed out. They get there, and she doesn't see Stanford White, which is weird, because he built this place. So she's assuming he's going to be there, doesn't see him. She's like, okay, I can take a deep breath. Cool. It's okay. Yeah. We're fine. They watch the show. Near the end, they hear a commotion. Stanford White has arrived.
Ah.
And she looks at Harry and she's like, we should go. And he's like, yeah, you're right. We should go. So they get up to leave. And on their way out, as they're passing Stanford White's table from about 2 feet away, Harry Thaw stops and shoots Stanford White twice in the head.
Whoa.
Once in the chest in front of 900 people.
Whoa.
Dramatic.
Yeah. And says, you've ruined my life. And people heard the first go around, people heard you ruined my wife, but then later it was confirmed that like he said, okay, you ruined my life. Mm-hmm. So there's, you can see both. People have said,
sure,
he said both. But
sure.
The final consensus was you've ruined my life. And yeah, Stanford's dead.
Okay.
Because that's what happens when you're shot from 2 feet away in the head twice.
Right. You're a dead boy.
You are dead. And then the trial of the century ensued. And it's long and dramatic, and this is not an episode about trials, so I won't go down that way. But basically, Harry thought he'd be good, and he was convicted to be insane,
hubris,
which he was. He was insane.
Oh, yes.
And poor Evelyn was like used through the trial and then dumped, and then she was dragged through the fucking muck through all of that. But she came out on the other side. She actually taught ceramics later in her life, which is a cute little anecdote.
Honestly, wow. Wanna like cry, right? A couple tears of joy.
I'm really kind of just jumping to all the art and murder related parts of this story, so like please, yeah, know there's a lot of holes in here. But
architecture.
But the happy
ceramics.
Yeah.
Murder.
It starts with architecture and it ends with ceramics. So
not a bad trajectory.
Yeah, all the stuff in between is gnarly.
You know, if you go through all that bullshit in your life and you spend your later days teaching ceramics, like, fuck yeah.
All things considered.
You came out on the other side.
Yeah.
Isn't that where we all want to end up? Just old ladies teaching ceramics?
I would like to teach ceramics right now.
I wouldn't say no to it.
I know, right? That sounds great. That's like kind of always low-key been my goal.
Honestly.
Is like I imagine myself as like an older person like doing pottery or like.
So what's like, up with that? Like do old people just, life just gets real hard and then you just decide you want to throw clay on the wheel? Because that's stressful. Have you tried to center something on the wheel?
I'm not good at it.
It's real hard.
I know, but I think that's the idea. Like, it's a very present activity. You got to just be, the clay. You just got to be there with the clay. You just got to be living.
You know
just
what?
Just trust your thumbs and go.
I'm good.
You say that now. We'll talk when you're 75.
Okay.
We're not there yet.
I mean, hopefully we'll still be making this podcast.
When we're like 75. Old. Yeah.
We're all teaching ceramics.
We're no longer the art history babes. We're the ceramic babes.
Like literally every one of us is like teaching.
We're the ceramic crones.
That's cute. Is it crones or cronies?
I think of crones as being an old woman that maybe is a hag/witch, which I think is appropriate.
is the goal. Like, that's the goal.
Maybe not the hag part, but the witch. The witch part.
Yeah.
And then cronies is like a bunch of guys that beat people up. I don't know.
Because cronies, yeah, that's like a gang, right?
Yeah, it's like a bunch of cronies.
Yeah.
You were waiting for me in the parking lot. Behind the Dunkin' Donuts.
But yeah,
my dad's name is Salvatore. I'm Salvi Jr.
Salvi.
I'm sorry to all the Italian Americans in the world. I am
one of you. You're welcome for some representation.
That's great.
Don't hold it against
me. But like, low key or high key, I really hope we all end up being like witchy ceramics teachers someday. I think that'd be dope.
If I die a witch, I'll die happy.
Right. Right.
If it worked for Evelyn Nesbitt, it'll work for us. That's all I gotta
say. She overcame.
Damn, dude. Yeah.
She had a shit life.
For real. And it's weird to read about some of the way people still talk about her, because it seems like it's shifting into the direction where people are like, oh, yeah, that's all right. But like, there's still a little undertone of like, she
was a model.
Built the bed that she lied in. And it's like, oh my God, she was 14
years child.
Old. Yeah. She was a baby.
That reminds me, there's this recurring skit on SNL in the past few seasons where they do this thing where it's like a actors round table and they have like contemporary actresses, and then they always have, always played by Kate McKinnon, this old school old Hollywood actress.
Oh, yeah.
And like the things that the old Hollywood actress had to deal with are just like absurd, and all the contemporary actresses are like shocked and abhorred. And I think that's just like a very real thing. It's like old Hollywood was a different place.
Yeah.
And like, and so I think that continues. Like, people just think that that's okay because it
has been for so long.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a horrendous story.
Yeah. All of these stories. On our Patreon, we're going to start doing, for every episode, kind of like forum discussions. So you guys can like hash out some of this stuff. Yes. So there will be a forum discussion for this episode, because there's like so many layers to this, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. And
yeah, this is like a really multifaceted
sort of. There's so much going on here. So definitely be on the lookout if you're a patron for those forum spaces. You can also become a patron for as low as $1 a month. So check that out.
Oh, wow.
Also, this episode, as tends to happen when we get a little sauced, has definitely been running for a while. So we're just going to split it up. We're going to do a two-part Art and Murder Halloween extravaganza.
Hey, hey.
Thank you for listening to part one. Mm-hmm. We got two more stories coming for you in Art and Murder part two. So be on the lookout for that. Yeah.
Check back in with us. I just kissed my mic.
We'll see you very soon.
Bye.
Bye.
It's not your fault, it's ours. It's just objectively a great statement.
Nat, I am so sorry.
No need.
Oh,
okay. No need.
We're gonna recoup here.
It's not we're gonna circle back. It's gonna be all fine.
I like how I implicated everyone in that. Like, you guys didn't do anything.
Hello all, Corey again. If you want to become a patron and help make the continued production of Art History Babes content possible, as well as become part of the Art History Babes special community, head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes. There's also a link in the show notes for you. Also, we're doing a giveaway in honor of the Patreon relaunch. You can be entered to win a goodie box, including a copy of our book, The Honest Art Dictionary, Art History Babe stickers, chocolate, a candle, these cute little art cards that Natalie has. Check our Patreon or our Instagram for pictures, but they're really fun. To be entered to win, become a patron. Every dollar pledged is an entry. So for example, if you become a patron at the $3 level, $3 equals 3 entries.
If you're already a patron, you just have to up your donation amount for entries. So if you are currently at the $1 amount, up it to $5 and you get 4 entries in the giveaway. This giveaway will run all of October and we will choose the winner on November 1st. Thanks again for listening and for your continued support. We're really excited to share all the new things we have in store with you. Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.